In this episode of She Talks Tech, we hear from Jonathan Cooley, co-head of the Clifford Chance Tech Group. Jonathan made press headlines last year regarding a manifesto he wrote in his bid to become managing partner for Clifford Chance. In the manifesto, he calls for the appointment of a chief happiness officer, as well as micro retreats for staff. You can imagine the headlines. In a law firm? Surely not. Jonathan also talks about his career as a tech lawyer, his passion for equity, diversity and inclusion, and how he has built an inclusive culture across the team he leads. In my lounge is the incredible Jonathan Cooley. Jonathan heads up a cross-disciplinary team of over 600 lawyers globally, advising on tech risk and opportunity. He has a particular area of focus on ethics, data, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and blockchain regulation. He was named one of Global Data Review's 40 under 40 tech lawyers around the world. He has wide-ranging experience in complex tech projects spanning M&A, fintech, IP, and business carve-outs for multi-industry companies all over the world. Jonathan is the editor of Talking Tech, the firm's global tech thought leadership hub. He speaks regularly on technology transformation. He is frequently quoted as an expert on the future of tech regulation in the Daily Telegraph, New York Times, Washington Post, China Daily, and the Financial Times. In 2018, Jonathan founded Ignite, the world's first law tech training contract, which fuses legal training and tech development. Jonathan is an advocate for increased diversity in tech and law, both traditionally male-dominated industries. He works closely with the Clifford Chance Accelerate Programme, which brings men and women together, developing female leaders of tomorrow. He also campaigns for more opportunities in the workspace for those with autism. Jonathan, quite an experience there.
That was a very kind introduction. Yeah, very generous. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. Oh my God, where do we begin? I'd like to kind of go back to the beginning. So tell me a little bit about your background, school, education, where you grew up.
So I grew up in the countryside. I went to a state school and applied to university from there. My parents were not grand. Lots of people, I think, associate law with old boys networks and that kind of thing. And you know, my mum was a teacher, my dad worked in the council. But I always wanted, I guess, to be a lawyer, partly because I've always had a kind of real thing for kind of social justice. And I think law firms and law can really achieve that. And we don't talk about it enough, particularly in the area that I focus on, kind of tech. So I went to Oxford. I was very lucky to get in there, and went to Hartford, where 70% of undergraduates now, Oxford undergraduates, are from state schools. So I'm very proud of that. Hartford College has always been a hub for kind of state school leadership in Oxford, and has, in terms of diversity and entry, been very focused on that. And then I kind of went into law after that. I studied English at university, so I'm not a kind of perhaps a straight-laced lawyer in that way. And I joined Clifford Chance now in 2014 and haven't looked back since. So it's been a great experience in an area which is obviously moving very quickly at the moment.
So why technology?
I don't think I would have done any other area of law. I think I found this fascinating because the technology as I was growing up, I guess, was accelerating very quickly. The law wasn't catching up. And we see that that's a problem now when we look at tech in particular, in the space of kind of AI and bias and prejudice that develops, and the fact that people's data is being misused often. And so the law was catching up and not moving fast enough. And I kind of saw in the market, really, that law firms and law could do a lot to fill that gap. And we've been proved right since then, because really in this space, it's only with law and good governance that you can protect communities and ensure that minority groups in particular have the rights that they deserve. And the link between technology misuse and kind of prejudice, bias and manipulation of groups of people is now very strong. There's increasing research there. So I guess that's why law, this kind of social justice strain that I've always believed in, it may seem quite unusual for that to come out of the mouth of somebody who works in a magic circle law firm, because, you know, we do make money, but also we care deeply about this area. And, you know, it's a happy balance.
So explain to me a little bit about what that looks like. So in terms of your kind of your day job, give me kind of an example of something that you would work on from a tech and social, where obviously tech is a major contributor, but you know, we're solving the problem around social justice.
Yeah. So again, we work for some of the biggest technology companies in the world. And the clients that I work with care deeply about this area. They want to do the right thing. The laws are very complicated. And so, you know, when I'm working in a hybrid way out of London, I'm also working globally. And if you look at China or US or Europe, they're all issuing new laws in this space all the time. A good example actually is on children's privacy, where last year the UK led the way on instigating new laws and the age-appropriate design code around this. And that's meant that globally, businesses have had to focus very much on how they're using children's data, protecting it, minimizing collection, thinking about their audience, thinking about the impact of their new technologies on growing brains and the vulnerable groups. And the UK has led the way on that. But actually, the work of the House of Lords in particular has been seminal and has created global impact. So that's a really good example of how the work that we do day to day, thinking about new law, applying it to technology business, can have impacts on not just kind of our clients and improve what they're doing, but also link through to the young minds who are seeing that, those videos or using that technology.
So day to day in your role, I take it you manage multiple clients, as we said earlier on, across multiple jurisdictions. You know, so if you think about where we've been in the tech space and kind of obviously the world has changed in the last couple of years, and you even alluded earlier on that, you know, the legal industry has got quite a lot to do to catch up. Where are those innovations? What are you seeing from a legal tech perspective that kind of excites you?
So law tech is interesting, and we have to make sure that we separate that clearly from the world of tech. So what my team does, and there are over 1,000 people as part of our tech group now at Clifford Chance, it's completely cross-practice, it's completely global. But obviously, as a law firm, we're very focused on legal tech, which is how do we use technology to innovate and how do we use it to connect with our clients and make their life easier, I guess.
Yeah.
A really good example of that is the use of apps to help deliver service and advice. And so one thing that my team has worked on in collaboration with our legal tech colleagues is a cyber response app. So if you're anywhere in the world, you have a cyber attack, actually the best way to respond to that is not sending an email. It can be immediately through your phone. You can contact us anywhere 24/7. You can wake people up. You can speak to people. And obviously delivering that service through a mobile device is much better than kind of the traditional way that the law has often worked, which is kind of, you know, through email or even before that, other methods. So it's just been much more rapid, engaging with clients in a new way. And I think clearly kind of app-based advice is very important. The other really interesting area is kind of artificial intelligence, because in law, paper heavy, admin heavy. When I started as a trainee, I spent a lot of my time in a basement in the Barbican reviewing documents. And it was, for someone coming out of university who's kind of ambitious and driven, to be shoved in a basement to look at five files, it's just like, what am I doing here? But actually now AI is being used wholesale to review documents to help with that process and actually make the lawyer's job much more interesting, because it takes away the grunt work and means that your teams can focus on things, strategic things, which are really important. And so that's been a really big shift in the way that law firms have engaged with tech to deliver service, because now the people you're working with are not scanning and looking at thousands of documents manually. They're doing that with the use of technology. So frankly, it makes our job more interesting and it means much more efficiency for our clients as well.
So you mentioned earlier on, obviously, you've got a huge number of staff that kind of work for you. Are they all traditional lawyers? What sort of backgrounds? I'm just thinking if people are watching, thinking, oh, my God, sounds like a really exciting opportunity for our job seekers.
Yeah.
What sort of backgrounds are those individuals from?
So obviously, law has always been a really interesting space for people to come from any background, actually, in terms of learning. And I studied English. Many people in our team kind of study kind of science subjects, STEM subjects. So it's not just law. But I guess you mentioned earlier Ignite, that's been a very important and game-changing program for us, because what we've said now since 2018 is that we don't want to recruit just sort of your standard lawyers. We want to recruit entrepreneurs, people who are coming from a tech background, who want to apply those skills in the area of law, people who'll think differently. So if we look at our teams now, firstly, they're really strong and diverse. The people I work with sometimes have been entrepreneurs, sometimes have worked in tech, you know, whether that's Google, Facebook, others, and actually want to pivot to law. but they don't want to lose the ability to develop new technology to kind of interface between these two really interesting, quite technical, but very fast-moving areas. So I think for too long, law has been quite straight-laced and has followed a model, which is quite Victorian. If you think about kind of, you know, desk-based time recording, just some of the models are, you know, quite old-fashioned. And what technology has shown us, and actually taking inspiration from tech companies, is that we can be much more innovative in that space. And that's resulted in a really diverse group of people coming to work for us, which is great.
I think we're seeing a real shift in the industry, actually. And you just mentioned it at the moment, time recording billable hours, right? So time to bust a few myths. Is it still about that? Is it still about, you know, pulling all-nighters, you know, working? I suppose it depends what area of law that you're in. But I expect a bit of that goes on. But is that what it looks like?
I think what's changed, and the pandemic and everything that's happened since then in terms of hybrid working, has, I think, been the most radical shift for law and law firms for a century. I mean, it's absolutely huge, because what we've shown is that we can adopt a really deeply flexible working model. We can remain really productive and connect with people and still do really well. And I think, you know, lawyers by their own nature are quite conservative, and we're worriers, right? We're concerned. We think about risk and regulation, and that's how our brains are kind of wired. But what's happened in the pandemic is that we had to let go of that a little bit and just experiment. And what's happened since then is that we found that, you know, young mums are able to balance being a really busy lawyer with bringing up their kids. Yeah. That we're spending, me as a young dad, I'm spending much more time with my children. Yes, I work long hours, and in law you do. You know, it is a kind of, it's a busy client-based business. But we're able to blend our home life with our work life. And actually, you know, speaking personally, that's made me happier in my role, has made me more creative, more energized about the whole industry and what we can achieve. And so you can work really hard and be really productive and be happy all at the same time. And those things are not mutually exclusive. And I think for some people in law, that's been a revelation, including me, in the past 2 years. And it's been a big shift.
Now, on that, you know, the whole shift that we've made, one of the things that you and I have discussed before, I mean, you are so passionate about equity, diversity and inclusion. So what kind of tangible actions have you taken within Clifford Chance, within your own business area, to make sure that everyone feels included? Because it's easy to talk a good game, isn't it? But actually doing something about it. So talk to me a little bit about that.
So I think, like, we can't pretend that we get everything right all the time, and no business can. I guess the biggest thing that I've learned is communication, and that it's really important to hear your team and for them to enter into kind of an active discussion with you. And the biggest thing that I would say people know about the team that I run with my colleagues and other partners is that it's very flat. So, you know, law firms are by tradition very hierarchical, closed door, and tech companies are not, right? They're very flat. They may have kind of roles and seniority, but it's kind of an open culture. That's what we're getting to, particularly in the tech teams that we have in the firm. And that means that people can speak up and speak out more openly, that they can share concerns, that frankly they can say, I love my job, but actually this needs to change, and not be worried about the consequences. And so communication is absolutely vital. The other thing I think is we do a lot of reverse mentoring, and I in particular have work with sort of a lot of colleagues with kind of disability and started to see the world through their eyes. And what I see, and this isn't just about law firms, it's actually globally, is that particularly in the world of disability, it's very easy to kind of sign UN compacts and to make big statements on LinkedIn. But actually, you need to make operational changes. And so with the disabled and special skill colleagues that I work with, we're starting to look at actually how can you shift the day-to-day. It's not just about signing those big agreements and putting posters up. It's about what does it mean for me to exist day-to-day in the environment I'm in. And those aren't just technical changes. It's not about giving people the right technology. It's actually kind of understanding how they perceive the world and what challenges they have day-to-day. And I think those operational shifts are absolutely vital. The stuff that people don't really talk about enough and perhaps don't put on their advertisements, that's the stuff we need to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, as I say, we see these grandiose statements and the proof's in the pudding as to whether you retain your talent by being inclusive. Let's talk about gender for a second. So one of the big topics at the moment is more kind of male allies, you know, more men kind of showing sponsorship. Do you believe men can become greater allies? And if so, how do they do that?
I think they can. I think something that people don't speak about enough is that I think women have amazing communication skills. I'm obviously massively kind of generalizing here. I think some men really struggle to open up, particularly in the workplace, and struggle to bring their whole authentic self to work. And I think if people can speak more openly about their feelings and emotions at work, particularly men, then that actually really helps connecting with your female colleagues or colleagues from minority groups and backgrounds, because particularly in kind of grand places like law firms and banks and others, people always want to put their veneer on and appear that everything's all right all the time. And frankly, we know that that's not the case. And so if you can break that down and actually talk about your feelings, and if men can do that in particular, I think that creates much more empathy with their female colleagues and also creates a narrative that actually we all struggle a little bit and it's fine to show vulnerability. And the world, you know, which I've lived in for many years, where people just pretend that everything, they put their suit on, their tie on, and pretend everything's fine, is a world that we're moving away from. And I think that's a really good thing. I think particularly it's a good thing for elevating women within the workplace and showing that actually the huge emotional intelligence that they bring to boardroom discussions and to client engagement is much more valuable than perhaps historically we've given it credit for.
I mean, in terms of like, you know, toxic masculinity, you know, to kind of all this pressure on men, isn't there, to kind of man up, be the man, you know, it's all of these horrible statements that we make that men feel that they have to kind of act in a certain way. How do we break some of that down?
I don't think men feel that. I think men have had it very easy, frankly. I don't have a lot of sympathy with people saying, you know, men have to act in a certain way. I think men have had thousands of years of benefit. And we kind of need to realise that we're the recipient of that. And my wife was talking the other day, you know, there's just been, you know, huge amount of focus around International Women's Day and breaking bias. My wife said the other day that she got on a plane and saw a female pilot. And herself, my wife's a doctor, she was sort of like, oh, what's this? And it's so interesting that basically that toxic masculinity has infected everything, including the way that women perceive other women in the workplace. Yeah. And I actually have to say that I think men should feel a responsibility and a burden around that and a degree of guilt. And we should work very hard to break it. So I always say to the young men in my teams, like, you don't know how lucky you are. And the one thing that I really encourage is that those young men really connect with these issues, because it's too easy as a young guy in your 20s to just ignore it. And if you do ignore it, that kind of, you know, fraternity group, that kind of tech bro world just self-perpetuates. So it's fine me having these conversations with you, but actually we really need our young men to get involved in this too. I mean, I saw Sadiq Khan has got a big project around this in London at the moment, around making sure that these conversations are not just happening in so-called progressive environments, but also environments which aren't necessarily that progressive, say in football grounds and in other places where men feel very comfortable. We need to have these quite uncomfortable conversations and be honest about it.
I think it very much does stem, though, from the leader, from a cultural perspective, you know, to be able to say it's OK for us to have these conversations and create those safe spaces for those conversations to be had. So I think there's a learning point in there to make sure that you're doing that.
And rewarding it, to be honest, that it's not just something that we should be like encouraging, but it's something that in our appraisals, again, this goes back to operationalizing. If we're really going to lead on this, we need to reward people for good behaviour. So it shouldn't just be like pro bono or a nice to have. I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at with my team at the moment is how do we change appraisal systems around this? So, you know, if you've got a disabled colleague in your team, how often have you sort of thought about involving them more in your work or asking them about their experiences or, you know, spending the day actually standing in their shoes and sitting in their office and seeing the world through their eyes? And that should be rewarded as much as winning a new client. And I think there's much more that we can do around that.
Absolutely. So we're big believers gender parity starts at home, right? We'll never achieve gender parity outside until we've sorted it out inside. And you mentioned earlier on, obviously, you've got two children and, you know, you're making school pickups and stuff like that. So I mean, obviously that looks like it from your perspective. How do we get more men to kind of get involved with that, you know, and to kind of step into that role as well?
Yeah, I think it's really important that my wife is not just my equal, she's my better. You know, she went to Oxford, she went to Cambridge. She is an amazing doctor, much cleverer than me. And I'm delighted about that and don't feel intimidated about it. So that's number one. And I think that we are both kind of career-driven people and we support each other in our careers, but which means actually we occupy roles, including for our children, which are very equal. Mum goes to work, dad goes to work, we balance stuff. I mean, my work before hybrid working was much harder to integrate, you know, pick up from schools, parents' evening, eating dinner together. And now I can do that. And, you know, that for me has been an absolute revelation. And so what I would say for all the men out there is you need to walk the walk, but also for hybrid working, you need to take the opportunity to really show that you're a role model in this space. And if you are tempted to go back to working 5 days a week, 9 till 9 in the office, then I'm afraid the young men and women who you work with will just replicate that and we won't change this. And the thing that I keep on coming back to is hybrid working has not prevented businesses from being more profitable. It's actually improved productivity because people are happier and more balanced. And I'm very clear that I will not sacrifice my family for my work, right? My family come first, always. I love my work, but it's second. And now we've got this gift that has come out of a horrific time to really use this. And my worry is that particularly those people who kind of, you know, felt comfortable before, they kind of go back into it. And as leaders, we can't do that. We need to set the example. It's really important.
Absolutely. It has to come from the top. The things I love about you is that you challenge the status quo, right? So you recently wrote a piece, didn't you, for the FT, challenging how we dress at work, you know, and maybe it plays back to kind of the stereotypes that we have of lawyers, the big suits, you know, the leather case and stuff like that. Tell me a little bit about that article.
So that's really interesting because, again, I think, you know, you can have perception of what a workplace is like and then actually there's a reality. And, you know, we've seen over the pandemic, our clients change too. So I work for some of the biggest investment companies and hedge funds and banks in the world. It's not just kind of tech companies and they have evolved. What we've seen is that, you know, you're sitting in people's homes like we're sitting in each other's homes now and you build up a very strong relationship. And also you can bring your authentic self to work, including what you feel most comfortable working in.
Yeah.
And so we're able to be much more authentic about who we are. And frankly, you know, suits are very uncomfortable. It's a bit of a uniform. Our clients aren't doing it. And, you know, if you want to wear a suit, great. But if you don't, that's also good. And there's nothing wrong with bringing a bit of character into the workplace. And that's all that FT discussion was about. And actually, it was like one of the most read articles of that week. It really chimed. And I think, you know, it all links. Clothes are actually very symbolic because they tell you what sort of other people, what sort of person you are, and it creates connections. And again, clothes, suits can be very intimidating. And actually, if you break that down, if you bring your whole self to work, including what you wear, then you can build stronger relationships. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I loved it. And again, you're quite right. You know, I think there is a time and a place for suits, but you're much more authentic when you wear what you're comfortable in. So I totally agree.
And you can be respectful too, right? You don't have to just, you know, if you've got a very traditional client, of course you would change your dress to adapt. But the world is changing and so are our clothes.
Absolutely. It should be about what's in your head anyway.
Yeah.
So you're applying for managing partner at Clifford Chance. And you recently wrote a manifesto, which I believe was leaked into the press. And it hit all of the headlines. Obviously, I know the story. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
So it's an active process, but I would just say that I think it's really important that we have diverse voices, including in law, and that if people are interested in doing roles, that they put themselves forward. And I think that Clifford Chance is the most amazing business, and I would love to run our London office and bring, I guess, what I've done in my own tech team, a bit of that to the firm. And that's all really it's about. And the other thing I'd say is that, you know, you say what is a leader? I kind of want to show that there are different types of leaders, and it's not just for people in my team. It's actually people, you know, in the wider world to see that, you know, diverse leadership does exist and can come forward. And I think that's probably why you know, the Times picked it up and the Guardian and the Daily Mail and others, you know, there is a different type of leader coming forward. And we should just be really excited about that, because that's, I want my daughter to see that I did this and for it to inspire her, frankly. And, you know, I'm just really happy that the response has been so positive.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think you're quite right. You know, we do need to shake up things quite a bit, and we do need new leadership. You know, we're in new times, and that will be new challenges and new ways of dealing with things. So, time to pass the baton. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, or what lessons have you learned over, you know, your extensive career that you'd like to pass on to those watching? It could be a piece of career advice. It could be a piece of life advice. What would it be?
I'll give a piece of life advice and a piece of career advice.
Okay, you can have both.
Give life advice first, which is when you have kids, or if you don't, make sure that your work does not consume your life. Because I've worked with too many people and seen too many people when they retire, they're just like, I've dedicated all this time, but actually it was just a job. So your job does mold you and shape you, and it gives you direction, but your job should not define you. So make sure that you are bigger than your job. That's really important. And that's my kind of life advice. My career advice is just have fun, right? Just be fearless. And if you think that something might not go well or an idea might not fly, that doesn't matter. Just try it out, have a go. And, you know, things might fail, but you can have fun along the way. And perhaps that's what people find surprising about a lawyer saying this, but actually lawyering is all about creativity and experimentation and thinking about new ideas, new ways of doing things. And in particular, again, I'll go back to this, I think law firms have possibly lost what they had kind of 200 years ago, which is, you know, creating people and voices which are really strong. And I think now we're seeing so much of kind of activism coming out of law firms in the space of kind of gender equality and diversity, and luckily, you know, creating a real voice around what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. You know, we have huge influence in our industry, and actually we should use that. And that's where the fearlessness comes from as well. And if I just sat at my desk doing contracts for the last 20 years, I wouldn't still be here, but I'm really fired up about my work. I love it. And that's because I've got a, you know, broader interest, and I am a bit fearless. And I think everyone should feel mandated to do that. Like you shouldn't feel scared. Just go ahead and do, create.
Yeah, I love that. Be fearless. So in that vein, what's next for Jonathan? What are you not frightened of? Where are you going? Oh, hopefully manage the part, right?
I just want to make sure that all the things, obviously the last 2 years has been traumatic for so many people. Yeah. And as we've watched a huge amount of tragedy. But out of that, we have seen something really special grow, which is, you know, a real closeness with our colleagues and the people we work with, a real empathy, and also a view that we can do things differently. And that doesn't need to affect profit. Like, you can be really productive and really happy. So whatever comes next for me, I just want to show that that's possible, and you can live that, and you can make it work. And I, you know, I want my son and my daughter, my son's 6, my daughter's 4, just to see that their dad was able to do this and kind of made a difference. So in whatever way I can do that, whether it's, you know, managing partner or something else, that's all I wish for.
And I've got no doubt whatsoever you will leave a legacy, 100%. So if people want to find you, obviously, where's the best place? LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn. Please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm on our website. Please connect with me through that. I'm very happy to have calls, discuss any kind of questions you have, including kind of career advice, right? Because I think the thing that's been very interesting about the last few weeks for me is that, you know, this paper leaked, but actually lots of people that I've never met have reached out to say, you know, this is really chiming with me and it's really inspiring. And so it's really nice to kind of make connections like this and to have a bigger conversation. What's happened is not just about the chance, it's about changing business more generally. And I'm, you know, I'd be delighted to connect with anybody who'd like to have a chat on that.
Absolutely. I mean, when do you get a lawyer saying, I've got an open door, come and talk to me? So, you know, do take Jonathan up on that. But also, obviously, Clifford Chance are hiring. So if any of you job seekers looking, do check out their open vacancies. I mean, who wouldn't want to work for Jonathan, right? On their website, or you can come to us and we'll put you in the right direction. But Jonathan, it's been an absolute pleasure. You know, I'm watching with bated breath as to where you go next and how you disrupt the industry, because it certainly needs it. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. And it's great to, you know, chat with someone who's very, very inspiring as being and is an extraordinary role model. And a lot of what I've learned is from you. So thank you.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about Jonathan, you can connect with him on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe and rate the podcast and give it that all-important 5-star review. And keep listening every Wednesday morning for a new episode of She Talks Tech, and we are Tech Women.